the whole issue about cyber attacks is very interesting.
One, I would always continue to remain relevant. In the world of cybersecurity, we say something that it's not about if, it is about when it happens, right? It might not happen now, but when it eventually happens, what do you do then? Don't be in a hurry. Once something seems suspicious, once it seems out of place, just pause, right? Don't do that. You know, 10 seconds pause to just check. Can save you significant, you know, losses on the area. So if someone says, oh, I want to do cybersecurity, first thing is, what area do you really think you want to, you know, want to focus on? And the truth is, there are a number of things that you can do wrong in terms of building the capabilities. And for someone that says they are just starting out, one of the things that they can always do is to look for opportunities to intern or, you know, to contribute one way or the other. Because you want to build your experience, and you need to build experience by, you know, actually engaging in something.
My name is Esther Adebayo, and on my tech journey with Esther, I sit down with tech folks to talk about how they've been able to handle rejections, overcome obstacles in their careers, and really cut through the hype. From coding mistakes to battling rejections, balancing work life, and even doing phenomenal things, my guests will share everything raw and real on my tech journey with Esther. New episodes drop every week, so you don't want to miss out. Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of My Tech Journey with Esther. Today's episode is very special because of the guest I have today. I have my brother, my own blood brother, here today. Welcome, Olaolu Agbaje, to My Tech Journey with Esther.
Yeah,
it's been a long
you.
Time coming, right? We've been planning and planning. Finally, you are here today. So,
exactly.
Yeah, thanks for honoring our invitation.
Yeah.
All right. So let's get started by, you know, I'll introduce Olaolu officially to us, and then we'll get started on the conversation. I feel like I'm too happy. Okay. Olaolu is a senior manager in the cyber and privacy function in KPMG Nigeria, with over 11 years experience in providing cybersecurity, privacy, and business resilience services to clients. He has led several projects that involve data protection and privacy assessments, implementation, cybersecurity governance, and a lot more. As a recognized thought leader, Olaolu has contributed to several cybersecurity publications and has established himself as a prominent voice in the field, both in Nigeria and across Africa. So everyone join me in welcoming my brother, in whom I'm well pleased and proud of, Olaolu Agbaje. Welcome officially to My Tech Journey with Esther. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm happy to be here. Thank you for having me. Like you said, it's been a long time coming, but we're happy it's happening finally. Yeah,
I'm happy it's happening finally. So, before we start all the serious stuff, I always call him Mople. I hope I will stick to Olaolu. So before we start all the serious stuff, I was like, what game can I play with you? Because I always play games with my guests, and I know you to a very large extent, and it was hard coming up with a game because I'm just like, okay, this one, I think I will know the answer. But I finally found, I think, the right game. So it's just, I will just ask you questions about maybe some stuff that I don't know, and you just tell me simple questions. The last TV show you watched was what?
The last
TV show.
TV show that we watched.
That you watched.
Okay. I'm trying to even remember.
Watch TV, right?
It's been a long
that's
time.
That's why I put it there, because I'm like, okay.
Last TV show I watched.
Yeah.
I think I remember back then, when I was still not too busy. We used to watch this food network, some of these cooking.
Okay, cooking shows.
I remember that. But you know, these days, apart from football that I watch, I can't remember the last time I actually set out to say, you know what, this movie I want to watch, except the one that Pierce says, you know what, let's watch this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's really work, and you know, resting and football and work and resting and football and all that.
No, we'll get to the root of that work today.
Yeah, but yeah, there are a few TV shows I'm sure I've watched. The Food Network TV show is one. I know we used to watch these reality TV shows back then. The one with these pastors' wives, I think there was one that.
Okay, yeah, I think pastors' wives reality show, right?
I remember that one. But it's been a while, yeah.
Okay. Your favorite holiday destination is what?
Holiday destination. Mm-hmm. I was reading recently somewhere in Japan, you know, they said there are some nice places. But favorite holiday destination? Just let's go to the Bahamas and dance, chill.
Oh shit!
Some nice islands. Just go relax and enjoy beachside.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So
nice and unwind.
So, well, you have a number of places that you hear about. Outside, of course, definitely outside the country. Somewhere far away. As long as you have a cool environment, you have the beach, you have the breeze, and you have, fun and games and family around, I think.
Yeah, okay.
We are good. It's not as if we have so much, at the back of our mind, the number of things that are still calling us, so we can't chill too much now.
Okay, we have three more questions to go. What's the best gift that you've ever received?
The best gift I've ever received. The best gift I've ever received, it's the best gift, not because of how much it is, but because of how it was. I think it was shocking, right? I was doing a project on an island, right? And then my wife-to-be eventually got a kick across. Access to that place was... it's almost like it's impossible, right? How do you get a kick across to someone that resumed that, this was Bonny Island then, and I was doing a project there, and I just got a call that there's someone with a cake to deliver at my door. I'm like, from where to where? Nobody knows me here. How did the cake get here? And voila, I got to know that she found a way around it and eventually delivered the cake to me. So it was shocking. So my colleagues were surprised. How come? From where to where? You mean that the tentacles spread to this place again? Like, it was impossible to even think about it. That it
would happen. Aww, shout out to Mama D.
Yeah, that was just the thoughtfulness. I think it was more important for me than the cake itself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, sweet. If you could only eat one food forever, what would it be? Don't tell me rice.
One food forever.
Yeah.
So that's why you do this now. What would that food be? Well, are you sure it won't be rice?
Rice, Abby.
Maybe I'll do protein. I'll do some well marinated, chicken.
Chicken.
Yeah, chicken and chips. Right.
Chicken and chips.
Let's have protein in there.
Okay. Chicken and chips. I'll take chicken and chips. And I said it will not be rice. So the last one, what's your favorite childhood memory?
Favorite childhood memory? Let me see how easy this is. So many memories now are flooding my mind. In terms of the favorite one, well, I think it was just the experience then. I remember we used to have this speech at prize giving day.
And it was in secondary school.
All through secondary school, right. And
you're always winning the whole
experience. Right, the whole experience, I think it was quite an interesting one. It's made the whole process quite memorable because, it was a competitive 6 years, right? Being competitive, and it was very healthy competition, like myself and, talks then, best of friends, healthy competition, seat partner, 6 years, in whole school and all that. So I think it was just the whole experience, working together, assignments together, visiting each other, building the friendship. And then we had that, you know, annual thing to look forward to, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it was the experience. It was it was very good. And just reflecting on how far we've come and where we are now, I think it's quite heartwarming. Yeah.
Aw, nice, sweet stuff. Yeah. Okay, so that was fun. I had to ask those questions because I'm like, okay, I need to, you know some more things. So yeah, now we can kickstart the conversation and go into all the deep stuff that you have prepared for us.
Funny enough, looking at you now, I remembered more memories.
Which memory? Which memory do you remember? God. Don't embarrass me. Which memory?
Oh my god.
I remember those mornings where I'm on my way to school. I think you were still in primary school then. On my way to school, and you were still in primary school then, and in the morning I need to get my shoes ready and all that. I'm just saying, please help me.
Me polish, you know, my shoe, polish my right? Shoe. Oh my god. Right?
And then when I'm coming back in the evening, I come with barbecue.
Oh, some yeah, of those, so sweet.
Just like, wow.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I remember those mornings actually. Like, around like 6 a.m., you give me your shoes, I'll polish everything, shine exactly. It.
That was a very interesting one, actually. Yeah, that just flashed in my memory. Wow, that was an interesting
time. Those were really, really good times, actually. Those were really sweet times.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get started talking about, you know, reading your bio and your experience. I know that you are a real, like, cybersecurity expert. So let's get started talking about cybersecurity. I know it's on the minds of many. I even recently received a DM, someone asking me, okay, I'm getting into cybersecurity. How can I start my cybersecurity journey? Maybe it's the name. Cybersecurity can be very intimidating to people out there. So for someone looking to get started in cybersecurity, for someone trying to kickstart a career, what's like an ideal progression that they can have to break into the field of cybersecurity?
Interesting one. Someone wants to kickstart their career in cybersecurity. I mean, when I think about this, and to be honest, I receive this from time to time. Right, someone wants to start their career in cybersecurity. How do they start? What's the progression like? You know, what should they expect? What should they be doing? The truth of the matter is that cybersecurity is a very, very broad, you know, area, body of knowledge. Right, it's a whole lot. And for me, the key question is, you know, what's the motivation? What is that thing in you that you feel that cybersecurity is, you know, what you want to do? Right. If I think about it broadly, you know, cybersecurity, you have those people that focus on the governance and risk type of things, you know, coming up with the policies, coming up with the governance frameworks, you know, risk frameworks. So there are people that is what they focus on. And then there are those people whose, you know, key focus is, you know, the operations in itself, right? You want to configure, you know, those security systems and devices to ensure that the network is secure. You know, those are people, you have people that do that. There are people that then test, right? You've done everything, you want to gain assurance or provide assurance that all that you have done, you know, is adequate. You have those who then focus on identifying the vulnerabilities, testing, you know, and giving that. So, I mean, those are some of the areas, right? There are a few others, but, you know, those are some of the areas. So if someone says, oh, I want to do cybersecurity, first thing is, what area do you really think you want to, you know, you want to focus
specialize,
on? Yeah. You want to focus on the testing, you want to focus on the, you know, the governance side of things, risk compliance, you know, or the configuration, the operations, you know, what exactly do you really want to focus on in cybersecurity? Right? The ability to answer that question, you know, is helped by, you know, also just exposing yourself to, you know, a few, you know, maybe trainings, you know, just to have a better understanding of the deep aspects of, you know, all of these areas, right? Once you have that understanding, it's okay, yeah, I want to go into security testing. You don't go into security testing by just going into security testing. You want to understand the infrastructure itself. So when they say networks, when they say web applications, what exactly, how do these things work? Right, you need to understand the inner workings of something to say, okay, I want to be able to test it for adequacy, right? So the technology understanding is what is critical, you know, and this is actually across most of the areas of cybersecurity, because we are protecting people, we are protecting systems, right? We are protecting data. So if you do not understand how, you know, these things work, you know, by default, you know, you can't just say, okay, I know how to test it. You know, it's just going to be, you know, head academic knowledge. But when you're presented with real life cases and scenarios, you'll be at loss as to, you know, what do I do here, right? So I believe that fundamentally it's important to, you know, have that exposure to understanding technology at the basal level, right? When you understand technology and you have the understanding of the different aspects of cybersecurity that we have, then you can make a decision based on your area of interest and say, yes, you know, I really want to focus on this. Let me take one or two courses here. You know, let me expose myself in this area. And for someone that says they are just starting out, you know, one of the things that they can always do is to look for opportunities to intern or, you know, to contribute one way or the other, because you want to build your experience, right? Build experience by, you know, actually engaging in something, right? So exposing yourself to such opportunities, it helps, right? You know, these days people look at the money first before looking at, you know, the value that they need to at least add to themselves, yeah. Right? So I think for me, that is what is important. And the way I, you know, ultimately, the way I see it is that once you're able to, you know, take advantage of, you know, those opportunities, then the real opportunities will eventually come, sure, you know, your way. Yeah. So that's the rest.
Okay. You talked about courses that people can take. Like, is it online or boot camps, or which one do you think is the most straightforward way for someone that is just looking to get started? Should they go on courses? Do you advise learning on your own as well? Is it something that people can just maybe watch a YouTube video, sign up on Udemy and just learn courses, or do they have to like go to a formal like school?
Right, so the interesting thing today is that I was telling someone yesterday that knowledge is cheap, right? In the sense that you don't need to do too much to get access to knowledge, right? Yes, there are structured learning opportunities that and avenues that exist, but fundamentally, you know, getting access to knowledge is very cheap and available these days. Right. The way I view certifications is that most of the certifications are helpful, you know, when you already, you know, you are not using the certification to necessarily build that knowledge from scratch. Right. You have good knowledge about a number of things, and then that certification exposes you further, and then you build, you know, on that. Right. So the basic knowledge is, you know, is available. I mean, most of the online learning platforms, you know, Udemy, Coursera, you know, LinkedIn Learn, you know, all those platforms, you have a lot of, you know, courses, you know, and, you know, opportunities to learn, you know, some of the basic things, you know, around cybersecurity and around technology. How do web applications work, for example, right? How do mobile applications work? You watch a YouTube video, you know, you have a lot of those resources, right? So people would need to, you know, just, you know, look at some of those platforms, right? A number of courses are free, a number of them are paid, right? Whether it's free or paid, at the heart of it is gaining the knowledge. Having the knowledge is one step out of the cave. The understanding is the other part. And, you know, most times people have knowledge, but they don't really understand it. And that's why when they're exposed to real life scenarios, they don't know how to apply that knowledge, because the understanding is not really there. Right, the understanding is, you know, sort of reinforced by your exposure to actual, you know, real life scenarios that would help you to consolidate some of the things you already got from, you know, these learning platforms, right? And it's so important. That's why as you do all of these things, look for volunteer opportunities, look for internship opportunities, you know, where you can actually contribute to something, right? When you think about volunteer opportunities, this could even be as simple as, you know, awareness. You know, you just want to be within the space. You're coming in afresh. You want to just find yourself within the, you know, a sort of cybersecurity firm where you have like minds. Some people are coming, you know, newly. Some people are building their skills. Some people are experienced there. But once you find yourself in those circles, right, then you are, you know, closer to getting to where you want to be. Right. So volunteer opportunities are, you know, very important. They are people that all they do is, you know, creates security awareness for, you know, for women, for children, for those who are less privileged, you know, and all that, you know, they want to ensure that they, you know, we call them vulnerable groups, right? You want to ensure that, you know, they are not taken advantage of by cyber attackers. So you want to push yourself in that realm, because on one hand, you are gaining knowledge, you understand the techniques or tactics of some of these attackers as far as social engineering is concerned, and so you're also creating a level of awareness, applying that knowledge, you know, helping people. So it's a win-win situation, right? So once you put yourself in that space, definitely, you know, you'll be able to apply a lot of, you know, the learnings you're getting, and then give yourself the opportunity to meet like minds, and then build your network of cyber professionals gradually. So yeah, I think that's wild advice.
Yeah.
And you know, someone that is also trying to expose themselves to knowledge in their area.
That's really good advice. When you were talking about like how people can gain experience, because that was supposed to be like my next question. How can people gain experience? But I think you've talked more about it, like interning, joining volunteer groups and all, just making people more aware about things, cybersecurity, how they can protect themselves from like cyber attacks, bullying, phishing and all. I recently saw something online, I think last week, of someone that a woman that was scammed of maybe $350,000, because the person, you know, we are in the AI world now, so it's even a lot worse. People can hack using AI. So he presented himself to be like Brad Pitt.
Okay, what?
Yeah, I saw it on Instagram, and she thought she was dating Brad Pitt. So anytime he's talking to her, I don't know what he uses the app. So she's seeing Brad Pitt. And so she started asking him for money, you know, that he's in his divorce with Angelina Jolie. I tried to, you know, get some money to separate. It was just messy. And I was like, I've heard a lot of all these phishing attacks, you know, people's scammers and all of this. Maybe it can just be one vulnerability on your phone or your email, and people just take advantage of it. They know your weak spots, and maybe this person might have known that, you know, Brad Pitt is her celebrity crush or whatever, and just took advantage of it. And okay, if I show up as Brad Pitt, this person will fall. So like, it's very important for people to create more awareness, and I think that's one of the ways that, you know, if you're new in cybersecurity or any industry at all, for me as a software engineer, I think it's probably easy, because even if I do not work for like a company, I do not have a formal like job experience, work experience, I feel like I can still build projects on the side, mock projects. But for something like cybersecurity, I don't know, is it possible for someone to build mock projects, or it's just like you have to literally go to the field and gain that experience on the field?
Well, so you can do stuff, right? And the truth is, there are a number of things that you can do on your own in terms of building the capabilities, right? These days, I mean, thanks to cloud, cloud computing, you can decide that, you know what, I want to have a small lab. You know, a small lab on the cloud, AWS, you know, Azure, and build, you know, that lab for testing purposes and scaling up purposes. So I set up, you know, a few systems, you know, when I want to test, I have a database, I have this web application, I have this system here and there, and then I'm, you know, gradually, you know, being able to test, you know, solutions. You want to install a solution, a number of solutions, you want to learn how to use the solutions, you know, you want to do a few things. There are platforms that you call vulnerable web applications that are for testing purposes, for example, right? You can build your small lab and use it to learn, right? You can decide that, you know what, you know, I've learned a bit, let me, if there's a small, what's it called, a small bounty, this bug bounty that, you know, organizations put up from time to time, right? Let me see if I can test my, you know, skills that I've acquired and see how far I can go. There are hackathons that exist, right? Oh, let me, you know, come together as a group, do some hackathons, you know, see how far I can go. Some of those things help with the learning process, right? You sort of expose yourself, and if you're able to go far, you gain visibility. When you gain visibility and that exposure, people know you, you know, you have opportunities to scale what you're doing. So yes, I think, you know, there are people that can, you know, you can start gradually, and depending on what you want to do, you know, you can easily, on your own personal level now, do, you know, a bit, and then see how you can find yourself among teams, and then also expose yourself that way. Today is a global, the world you say is a global village today. I think COVID-19 sort of made it come home, right? That's, a lot of things that we never explored before, now we do, right? The whole remote working, you can have yourself work on a project here, working with teams globally, working on the same project. So yes, I think, it's important to also expose yourself, in terms of going out there, but I think we have much more to even start with, and then see how that goes, for someone that is venturing into cybersecurity.
Okay. Yeah. So for anyone venturing in cybersecurity, like what Laola said, it's very useful to just get that experience, also learn on your own and push yourself more. Because first off, you even have to decide what niche or what aspect, because cybersecurity is very broad. I think not many people realize it. You just say, well, I want to get into cybersecurity. But the way you broke it down, it just made me understand that, okay, it's cybersecurity, but then there are specializations within cybersecurity as well. Yeah. Let's talk about last year. There was a CrowdStrike Microsoft incident that happened last year, and I think I just woke up that day and I saw that train stations were messy, airports were messy, there was no way of knowing where you were going to, all that. I think the data on the screens was just missing, and it was an incident that mimicked a cyber attack. Even though people said that it wasn't a cyber attack, it was just some issues that happened, right? So as a cybersecurity expert, what was going through your mind when you heard that? Did you feel, oh my gosh, someone has hacked something? Or what was the experience like when you heard it?
Well, so it was really an interesting one. Let me see, when it happened, sometime in the middle of last year, I think I was, so I belong to a WhatsApp group, a few cyber professionals. And so someone posted it. So I thought it was just one of these regular, it came in the middle of, work. I was in a meeting, so I just glanced at it. I didn't really pay so much attention to it, maybe it's just one of these things. I just read the headline and moved on. And almost every day you have
one. Yeah, you have someone that is sharp putting one news in WhatsApp.
Exactly, so. One incident or the other, someone sending something. I just maybe it's just one of these things. So I moved on. But while working, I just saw that I was added to a group, within my larger organization, the global organization. I was part of a cybersecurity group, and then a lot of conversation was happening. So I said, okay, looks like this is serious. Let me go read the news that was posted on the group chat. So I went to read it, and I saw, wow, this thing seems, quite serious, organizations being affected, people stranded, you can't do this, you can't do that, systems are no longer available. So, it was an interesting one. Something that seemed, seemingly to help the organization. We talk about patches, security updates, right? Security updates are supposed to help to address a gap or a vulnerability, fix a gap, on a software or a hardware, So this was something that was deployed by CrowdStrike themselves on their own security solution. A security solution that is supposed to protect the organization's systems, right? So this solution then received an update. Upon receiving the update, you reboot your system, it fails to work.
It fails. That,
right, so you just see that you can't boot the system, you're stranded. The system is not responsive at that level. So, for me, it was quite, shocking. At least for working directly with clients over here, we didn't have, I didn't have, direct clients that directly were impacted, because of that. Again, you think about the fact that there are people who have patch management processes that you do not receive patches immediately. It also has the advantage, right? So if a patch is coming today, you have configured your systems not to install that patch immediately. So there's a delay, right? The delay is supposed to help you to test the patch, ensure that you are comfortable with it, and then you push it to your systems, right? So the responsibility of organizations really is to ensure that, in as much as patches are supposed to be implemented or installed, you also have your own internal processes to test these patches before they are deployed. But when you don't have that in place, you just trust the OEM that well. The OEM has prepared the part, uploaded it. So yeah, go ahead.
install it. So you just auto-install. Most of the organizations that were affected, you know, auto-update, auto-install. So that was what happened, right? And, you know, the spread was quite significant. It was almost like a major issue, right? All the people using this, you know, solution were affected, right? And, you know, you would not imagine that a solution that should protect you then, you know, violates, you know, creates that problem where you can't even access the system again in the first place. So that was, you know, that was a major one, you know, globally, right? It was almost like an attack box. You know, it's an incident.
It was an incident from their own, their own negligence, kind of.
Exactly.
How many resumes have you sent out with zero response? Or maybe you're getting interviews, but you just can't seem to land a job. I've been there and I know it's so frustrating, right? But the good news, I've created a toolkit to change all of that for you. Introducing the Get a Job Toolkit, your step-by-step guide to finally land your dream tech job. Inside, you get 3 resume and cover letter templates, a job tracking sheet, 100+ interview power phrases, reach out messages to recruiters, and a LinkedIn optimization checklist. I created this toolkit because I know how hard applying to jobs can be. So whether you're just starting out your career or making a career switch to tech, this will save you so much time and stress. Click the link below to grab your toolkit and let's get you hired.
So what can companies do better? I know you spoke about how they, you know, they shouldn't just auto-update, let's say installations and platforms or software. Like, what else can companies do?
Yeah, so that's usually driven by their patch management policy. So organizations should, by default, have a patch management policy, a patch management process, right? The patch management policy will let you know, or will define the requirements for, you know, installing these patches, and it will then help, you know, whoever is managing the applications to know that you should, you know, remove such a configuration for auto updates, right? Because when updates are available, you want to download, test, and then deploy, or at least go to the online community, look at, you know, what people are saying about this latest version of the updates. Are there issues? Are there, you know, concerns? So when you give yourself, you know, based on your policy, oh, we have a 2-week policy, T+2. So any updates that is released, we don't install it immediately, we have a T+2, you know, timeline, except if it's an emergency update. So if an emergency update is an update that they are saying, oh, there's a ransomware attack, all systems, Windows XYZ version is being attacked, patch ASAP. In that case, you might have a process. You will still want to test it, but you can't have all the time to wait to see the impact on your system. So you might most likely, you know, do very minimal or limited checks and then install. But for something that there's no emergency, right, it's not an emergency update, then you need to have that clear process that you must test before you deploy or install, you know. So that is a major, you know, control that can, you know, typically help to prevent, you know, something like this, you know, from happening. Testing is important. You know, most times people underestimate, you know, what testing means and, you know, what it helps to achieve. Right, but when you test something, you monitor, you see the implications or the impact, and then yes, you might not be able to always test within a replica of your production environment, but at least it's better than not doing anything at all. It's a major one. It's a major one that organizations should take as learning from that incident. Yeah.
Yeah, and speaking of like these cyber attacks and, you know, things that happen on, you know, online, I was reading a report last year and I think it was from Forbes. They mentioned that there were over 2,300 cyber attacks that, you know, that affected millions of people. So bringing it home to people, like, just how can people be more aware, you know, of cyber attacks and protect themselves? Because, you know, we are in a world where some people are very, you know, careful about cyber attacks. They have 2FAs, they have things like that on their, you know, their software, but some other people, they're not really aware, they don't really know. So how can people, you know, put measures in place to also protect themselves from all these cyber attacks so that, you know, they don't fall victim of hackers?
Yeah, thanks. You know, the whole issue about cyber attacks is a very interesting one. I would always continue to remain relevant, and that's because the reality is, as much as we wake up
as good guys every morning to go to work, do something. There are people that wake up every morning as bad guys to
thinking about who is their next victim.
Exactly. So they wake up and they say, ah, this guy that I sent this message, he hasn't responded. Let me see if I can craft it differently. Right? Oh, this guy that we've been getting this much information about, we are waiting for him to take this step so that we can take this action. Let's just keep an eye on him. So there are people that's their, you know, they wake up every morning and that's their agenda for the day. So as you are going to work, some people their own work is, you know, as you wake up to say, let me log into this system, you know, and achieve something for the day. What they are logging into and achieving for the day is how to defraud people, you know, how to get data and how to, you know, create chaos. Right? So it will continue to persist, unfortunately, no matter how much you try. That's why, you know, within the world of cybersecurity, we say something that it's not about if, it is about when it happens, right? It might not happen now, but when it eventually happens, what do you do? So there's that concept that, you know, it's really about when it happens. And that's really emphasizing the fact that beyond your, you know, detection, you know, and protection, there has to be a clear approach to responding and recovering, because that attack would eventually happen. All right, so if I go to your question around awareness, the truth of the matter is that humans are still, no matter how much, you know, sophistication an organization has, you know, in terms of, you know, put all the firewalls, you know, put all the security solutions and all that, it's still human beings that are behind this thing. And as long as, you know, human beings have an inherent limitation, which is more like we trust, right? We get used to patterns, and so it creates trust. So if you're used to a pattern, for example, someone sends you an email to request for this and you just approve, there's already a pattern. When an attacker does something similar in line with that pattern, you just end up, you know, approving.
Yeah,
right? If someone that is compassionate, someone says, oh, I need money now, I'm stranded, ah, this person is my loved one, yeah, let me quickly send you money, bam, you send the money. Right? It is the inherent weakness in humans that the attackers are taking advantage of. Right? So, and that's why there's always also a concept that is, you know, you should pause and think before you act. Right? Don't act on impulse. Don't act because it appears urgent. You should pause and you should think. And so the key tool that these attackers use is, you know, social engineering. Once they are able to, you know, come up with phishing emails. Phishing emails are emails that are crafted, you know, to appear to come from a legitimate, a trusted source, but it's actually an attacker that is, you know, behind it, right? And they are within the email, they've embedded, you know, maybe malicious links or malicious documents such that when you click it, you know, then it's executing or we call it payload or a malicious script and then tries to take over your system. So you have such, you know, that, you know, attackers, they sit down, they craft. You said something interesting, right, about AI use today. So AI tools also help. Right, you have AI tools that in the past an attacker will sit down and say, ah, I need to craft something sophisticated. Today, don't go to the AI tool and tell them what you want, tell it what you want it to.
I need to give you correct,
you solid, all the typographic errors that we used to have back in the day. That you say, ah, efficient email, wrong grammar, right, blunders. You don't have it anymore.
Exactly.
Right? Solid, sophisticated, sound, you know, believable, you know, body of an email that is sent. Then you just believe that, okay, this person is saying what is valid. Right, closely related to, you know, this phishing is business email compromise, and this is the one that most organizations, you know, can easily lose significant amount of money to. Right, because someone then appears to be a C-level staff, a CEO, you know, a CFO, and is sending a mail that, oh, I need so and so and so money, credit this, my, you know, dollar account to this, you know, I need it to make so and so payment ASAP. And
so even
it's
organizations can fall like victim of all these phishing emails.
Absolutely, because by default, the CEO, you know, will not call and be, you know, begging for money or going through. The organizations that the processes they have in place is, was Oga CEO sends that email saying I need this done, you act on it immediately.
Need it done.
Right. If I know that my CEO is on vacation somewhere in Australia, right, and I know that, you know, he has his family with him and he's making certain demands, and that's the way he, you know, that's the way he plays, that's the way he runs the business, and he's making that demand, and an attacker that already has access, right, let's say the name of my organization is STM, right? STM, you know, .com. And an attacker decides that, you know what, let me set up a domain that is STRN. Now, the RN together looks like an M, right? So they set up a domain, and then they know the they have a level of insights into what you're doing, because maybe they've gained access to your network, they are seeing the emails, they've set up a domain, strn.com. And so the boss sends an email, they have access to that email, they block the email, send one from their own attacking system, copy, you know,
literally the replicas same thing
of the same people, apart from the main recipient who they want to take the action of transferring the money. All the other people there are the fake people that they've copied. They are the people that are within the domain that they've created, but the same names. So they delete the original.
Someone would think that every other person is seeing it. Exactly. Oh my gosh.
And so you get the email, and your guy said, you know, he has initiated the conversion. Oh, no, I will need you to transfer so and so to you by this time tomorrow. Just be on alert. I need it ASAP. The moment Oga makes the request, okay, please transfer it. This is the account number. They just delete that email, put the one that they created, and then Oga sends, you know, the person sends the money. Oga is then saying, ah, how far? I've not gotten this money. So, Oga, but we sent it to you.
For you. Yeah.
The money has gone. Yes.
Sounds understand? So.
So that's how
this like business that can really happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So organizations just need to be aware, right? People need to be, you know, aware. You need to pause, you need to think, right? If something seems fishy, most times people will tell that I suspected something was looking funny about the email, but you know, they just ignored it.
Just ignore. True.
You know, they just feel that, yeah, I mean, maybe it's just, you know, it's just me, because they are doing a number of other things. The email comes, just hey, Oga said it already, now let's respond. They don't pay attention to the fine details. So the details are there in the mail to call the attention of the fact that this thing is malicious. It's not, it's suspect, it's suspicious.
It's not looking
to,
right.
Yeah, they just ignore it and say, I've been waiting for it now. Oga sent it, let me respond. And then it goes, and that's the end, right? So these are things that, you know, happen a lot. So we you know, the encouragement and the charge for people is, you know, pay attention to this thing. Don't be in a hurry. Once something seems suspicious, once it seems out of place, just pause, right? Don't, that, you know, 10 seconds pause to just check can save you significant, you know, losses, right? So it's important. So that awareness is something we continue to push. Businesses, individuals, just be aware, right? If it seems suspicious, don't respond. Someone calls you and says, well, I'm from your bank, and you did this, you did that, blah, blah, blah. It's possible that they have, you know, information about you. They've gotten your data from somewhere, and they are, you know, creating an impression that they are to be trusted, right? So someone is saying, oh, are you not so and so, but you know, I'm calling from so and so, your date of birth is this, there, your this is this. You know that once you start hearing those things, you know, it's only a bank that should have this information. Okay, I trust you, you are calling from a bank, and then they're asking that, okay, you get a code in 5 minutes, we are trying to process
and
so and so.
Send it to us.
Once you get the code, call it out so we can finalize it. You say yes, okay. Meanwhile, the code they are trying to do is a code to gain access to maybe a financial
platform,
your OTP. You say yes, you just say that you don't have access to your platforms anymore.
You will find out.
Right. But if you pause to think, you say, ah, will my bank really be calling me? What's this about? I didn't make
what
this
do they really need my, you like,
and then you tell them, don't worry, I'll come to the banking hall tomorrow to address it. There's no hurry. Right. You get, so that's in itself, once you have that awareness, you have to be a step ahead of them and you won't fall prey and victim to this. But like I said, our inherent limitations as humans and weakness is that if you are not focused, you are doing a number of things. When that call comes in, you are not processing it as if this thing can be malicious. You just, you know, act and, you know, almost half, you know, not too focused on it. You just half-minded,
half-hearted.
Yeah, you just act on it, and then it's much later.
And then later in the day, you are not like, oh my god, what did I do?
What happened? This alert is coming in. I didn't perform this transaction. And backtrack, you didn't realize that, you know, you were not at alert when, you know, that call came and took advantage of that. Yeah.
True. All you said is so useful. I think even me, you know, you mentioned that attackers take advantage of, like, your weaknesses. Even me, I almost was, you know, a victim of cyber attack, and I'm just thankful. Yeah, I'm just thankful because, you know, I ordered something. I don't know how this person knew, and I was expecting a delivery, and this person also sent me a message in line with the delivery. So, like you mentioned, I wasn't even aware. I just felt like, oh, this is the delivery I'm expecting. So I just clicked on the link, and thankfully, you know, my bank was able to block my card and it didn't sail through. But, you know, I'm thankful. Just pausing, you know, my weakness at that point was, okay, my delivery, I've been waiting for this thing, I finally have an update. So attackers really, I don't know, maybe it's based on the data they get. So right now, when I even get an email, or I'm just very careful, like you said, I'm not in a haste to click any link, to do anything. If I see something that is malicious, like even if it's an email, I don't leave it in my folder, I just delete it instantly. Like, if you really need me, you message me or email me again. If it's, you know, a hacker or something malicious, like, that's the end of the thread. So I think it's very important for people to be very careful and not just act impulsively, just like take a break and just pause before you respond to anything. And like you said, is the signs are always there, whether it's red flag or orange flag, but you always feel some type of way, but just be careful. Yeah, so let's talk about your journey as a, you know, your journey to, from joining KPMG to, you know, ascending as a senior manager. I think last year you got an award of long service, right? Long service award last year. Yeah. That's like 10 years. You're in your 11th year now. Or 12th?
My 12th year, actually.
Okay, nice.
September means 11 years, yeah.
Okay, nice. Yeah. So you're in your 12th year now.
Yeah.
So I remember to some extent the early stages, you know, when you got the job and everything. But yeah, like, share more insights into what was like the first year, second year, like, starting off, you know, your career.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. When I joined KPMG then, it wasn't... So I joined... the unit was IT advisory, right? Mm-hmm. It was IT advisory. My first, you know, job then, you know, was more like an internal audit work. I had to travel, you know, to... up country, Bauchi, Gombe, you know, Jos, then, right, doing some internal audit work with the internal audit team. And then got back, did bank audits, you know, everything was relatively, mostly new, things I hadn't done before, right? So, you know, we didn't have like a cybersecurity team as we have today, right? So, coming up the ranks gradually, you know, from my first year, getting into the second year, you know, you grow so fast, you know, as a consultant, you grow really fast. Development is high speed, right? It's high speed because you're exposed to a whole lot, right? You do a whole lot of things within that space of time. You're exposed to so many clients, different clients, you know, problems that you need to, you know, go in as a consultant to provide, you know, advice and stuff. So yes, I mean, that was, you know, how I started, you know, without, without necessarily being in cybersecurity, or more of a technology advisor, so more of exposure to technology, exposure to systems, exposure to, you know, the way, you know, risks, you know, and controls, you know, that interplay, understanding risks, cyber risks, IT risks, and then the controls to, you know, help those risks, and then being able to audit those things. That was the foundation for me, right? And I think it's been very good because it then creates a perspective where every other thing that is done with, based on the level of understanding. So I'm not doing something just because they say it should be, but the question is, what is the risk? All right, what's the risk to the business? You know, if we do it this way, is the control effective? If you think the control is effective, how is it operating consistently in a way that you think it is still effective? I give an example. If someone says, oh, you know, these doors that have magnetic locks that the auto close, once you open them with a card, you know, they close and all that. So someone says, oh, this control is effective. Every time you badge your card, you go in. Without the card, you can't go in and all that. Someone says, well, how effective is it? Let's power down the lights. And suddenly, you see that door is not UPS, right? You then realize that, oh, the control is not effective, right? Because, you know, there are scenarios that, you know, are there, you know, when they come to play, you realize that there's a control gap. So you power down within 2 minutes. Let's say the grid power over here, we talk about PHCN or NEPA, you know, is out. and then suddenly someone that shouldn't have physical access walks in through the door, he has access. So those sort of things build your mindset and you understand that, you know, it's not just about how it has been designed, but what scenarios, you know, can play out that will make that control ineffective. So I think this was quite foundational for me, just ensuring that there's a clear understanding of controls and risks, right? It was very fundamental, and being able to audit these systems means that one is able to identify what the gaps are. And when I bring that back to cybersecurity, which is what I eventually, you know, was exposed to, you see that your understanding of the risks and controls helps you to understand the way the attacker also thinks, right? Early on in my career, I was also then exposed to the technical security assessment, or you call ethical hacking. Right, you go into organizations and then you see the extent to which you can gain access, you know, from an internal point of view, call it internal vulnerability assessment and penetration testing. So you just go in, all you have is physical access to the building, and then see, can you gain access to physical systems, you know, networks and all that, right? And you know, that in itself was also, you know, also exposed, you know, me, and I was able to build on all the other things I'd learned, you know, around controls and risk, because then you understand why, you know, a control has been designed in a certain way, and then you are thinking of the scenarios. What if this were to happen? Will I have access? What if this happened? You know, have they considered that in implementing this? And those are the things that you are essentially doing, because the organization has brought you in to assess them for, you know, control gaps, you know, from a technical point of view. So it's easy to say, ah, you are fine, there's nothing, you know, you guys are perfect, you know, you are doing a good job, thumbs up. You collect your money and you go, right? You know, it's very easy. The work in itself is being able to identify those gaps and say, you know what, we've done the assessment and we came up with a number of scenarios. We saw that these ones we are finding in these instances, there are gaps here and there, right? That is the value. And, you know, it's usually challenging because the organization too doesn't just leave everything bare without controls. So you must think of, you know, those is your problem solving skills have to be very solid, you know, for you to be able to identify that these are, you know, the challenges. And as I wrap up on the point, you realize that, you know, growing, becoming an associate, you know, manager, senior manager, the dimension of the work or the requirements shifted from not just, you know, from technical to less technical to managerial, you know, managing the clients, managing people, managing teams and all that. So it's been a very interesting journey, a very, you know, a rewarding journey as well. Right, development, the mind, you know, and, you know, other parts of life. So I think it's been a very good one for me. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I think it's been very interesting and rewarding, because I remember the I think it was the first month or the second month, we used to live very far away, and you had to like wake up early, you know, go all the way, come in the night, everybody's like, ah, you will soon come home, it's already 10 p.m., you know, all those all those experiences. But now it has paid off, because you're a senior manager and you're doing very well, like, in your space. So do you remember any experience or moments in your career that was, like, defining for you, maybe when you were promoted or when you got the award, or any moments in particular that, like, you can't forget?
A defining moment for me. I think the defining moment for me was when I was in my third year, right? There was a project we're supposed to go, I was supposed to go with someone, and it wasn't here in Lagos. So, but the person was leaving the firm, and, mm-hmm. you know, I was, not as if I didn't have some knowledge, I could do it. But, you know, I wasn't supposed to lead the project, right? But, you know, my manager and partner decided, you know what, you go ahead, go with this other junior team member, you lead the project. When you, you know, we'll make arrangements to have someone, you know, join you from overseas, because it was quite, you know, we didn't have the people that were leaving, or the person that was leaving was like the most senior technical lead. So we said, okay, we'll make from a member firm to come, you know, join you and all that. So that was the arrangement. But, you know, as would have it, I made significant, you know, progress on that particular project, and the impact was very significant, right? The impact was significant such that we didn't even need the other person to come join us anymore, right? So, and it was the technical aspect was a major one for us at the time. It was defining because, you know, it's almost like what happens in sports where someone is injured, the coach says, oh, this, you know, younger player, yeah, go show yourself. And the guy comes back and scores a hat-trick. And you're like, wow,
we didn't know that
we had, you know, we didn't know we had this person. Ah, we now say, okay, you know, he's rewarding the trust that the coach had in him. So something like that, right? So I think for me, it just made a lot of sense that, you know, once you develop yourself and you build yourself, you know, and you expose yourself, you are prepared, the opportunity comes, right? You know, I believe something that life, you know, life and chance, time and chance will always bring opportunities, right? When the opportunities come, you must make the right choices to take advantage of them. When you make the right choices to take advantage of them, it builds your proficiency. Your proficiency increasing, you add more value to yourself, and the cycle continues, right? If you don't take advantage of them and you don't make the right choices, you won't be able to build your proficiency. The opportunities will probably never come again, and your value will not be where truly. So I think that's really my own perspective, you know, to life. And you know, that was quite a defining moment, you know, just putting me at that point where I then began to lead, you know, the teams, and then gained that, you know, level of visibility that, okay, yeah, I can do this, actually I can do this. Yeah, so that was it for me.
Yeah, that's really nice to hear. When you were talking, you spoke about how as you've grown in the career ladder, somehow your focus has shifted from technical to, you know, you're still doing technical, but now you're doing a bit of managerial, dealing with clients, dealing with the other people that are under you that you're mentoring as well. So when you're looking to, I know you've been in a situation where, you know, you are in like a hiring committee. So knowing that a lot of people watching this, they're also going to be, you know, kickstarting their cybersecurity journey or even trying to advance in their cybersecurity journey. When you're hiring as a senior manager for a role of maybe a cybersecurity analyst or some sort, what do you look out for?
Okay. So hiring, I think for me, one major thing is the problem-solving skills, right? Okay. I look out for people who have very strong problem-solving skills. Like I said, you know, the problem-solving and creativity sort of go together. And that's because, you know, as a consultant, you are being paid for solving problems. That's the truth.
Yeah.
You have a very strong ability and interest to solve problems. And, you know, what goes closely, or, you know, closely related to that is then your desire for knowledge. You must be ready to read, learn, you know, sort of mop knowledge and be able to transform it or translate it in such a way that it then adds value to people. So I look out for people who are, you know, really interested in learning. They have that track record based on experiences that, you know, where they built themselves, they are self-driven, they are, you know, critical thinking, analytical thinking, problem solving skills, you know, on top, you know, they're on top of all of those things. You know, I think for me those are major things. So your creativity, your problem solving skills, you know, critical and analytical thinking skills, you know, and then your desire for knowledge, your desire to learn, your passion for learning. I think for me those are major things that anyone, and you know, it's cybersecurity, but I'm sure if you have those basic skills, many things you get involved in, you'll be able to, fly, you know, accelerate your growth, so to speak.
Nice. Thank you, Wopler. This has been very insightful. Even me, that I'm not a cybersecurity expert, you know, I've learned a couple of things, how to protect myself, and I'm sure a lot of people also that are interested in getting into like the cybersecurity field have also, you know, learned from what you've shared with us. So thank you for honoring our invite, and hopefully maybe in a couple of seasons more we'll call you and you'll come again.
Sure, I'll be happy to do that. I mean, I've also enjoyed myself. I mean, doing this with you, chatting on this platform with you has been good. I'm sure, like I said at the beginning, when people look at me, they say, ah, I can see two faces, the same
similar
person
faces.
On the right.
Interesting. I can see it too. Thank you so much, and thank you to everyone that has joined this conversation and that has listened to the very end, and I'll see you in another episode. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.